All right, in studio with me is independent candidate Anele Mda. I was just telling her off air, I said, you know, Anele, you are incredibly brave. And watching your journey, I think when one knows and understands how hard it is for women in politics, watching you from way back when you started out as a young person in politics, and seeing the fact that you have stayed true to the cause throughout the years, it really is remarkable. What inspires you? What has inspired your journey?
Good morning, Kathy, and good morning to the listeners of SAFM. Thank you so much for hosting me, and welcome to radio. You sound so well-placed in radio.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Anele.
You are very right. A journey that started when I was, 11, 12 years old, and we're going for 46 now on the 20th of April. And still at it, it certainly has been a journey that has been driven by the belief in the people of South Africa. And also, I think more than anything, the belief to one's ability to stay true to the cause, especially when one's drive is out of conviction and there is no superficial and intentional personal gain that one seeks to get out of this. And I think that's where the difficulty for most people is always at, not knowing how to, keep to a journey in the most sincerest of ways and being true to it without, getting tempted of how long the journey may be and what gets put across them along the way, where you may either get defocused or you get lost because there's so much that is happening. But for me, I think also my political activism has always been about paying respect and homage to my grandfather, who is the person who introduced me to politics and who's the person who taught me about honesty and integrity when you are a leader. And those things, over the years, I've come to realize that if you are indeed a person who regard yourself as a leader, you cannot at every turn have your integrity questioned. You cannot at every turn have your image tarnished, and you cannot do things in private that you cannot be proud of when they are out in the open.
Mm. So let's talk then about the difference, because it's a difference that I guess somebody like you would be able to appreciate, because you have served within political party structures, and now, of course, you're doing it alone as an independent candidate. So let's talk about the journey. Just from having served in different political organizations, the lessons that you got out of that.
Well, I think firstly, the experience of having been in a political party, having been a part of the ANC, and also being part of the founding members of COPE, it has certainly sharpened my lenses. That I look into the political landscape with. It has also enabled me to be able to see a distinct difference of what happens when we are serving the South Africans within party political structures, and what are the things that at a close range, a person who is outside may not be able to have a direct appreciation of and knowledge of. And having served in these organizations, I think it led me to one conclusion, which that at this point in time, 30 years, I can say without any equivocation and without fear of any contradiction, that politics as they currently stand do not serve the people of South Africa. Democracy has been made only to be a benefit of party political structures rather than the people that it is aimed or purported to be about. And I think it's well displayed how, Kathy, you will see the games that are played on coalitions. That's where you will get to see that indeed this thing is not about the people. It's just about the closest each party can get to both the coffers, whether at the national level, or provincial level or metro level. But it's about each party wanting to ensure that it secures its hand in the coffers of the Republic of South Africa. And when you do so, when you look at that, you realize that If then you are able to, whilst you look so differently in your political pursuit, but you are able to match for positions, it means there is absolutely nothing that one can regard as a difference that exists between the political parties in their formation, except to say you simply trap people using different methodologies, yet the outcome is actually the very same in all political parties.
Anele, you were in your mid to late 20s then, when, of course, you had the shift from the ANC into COPE,
yes,
and then later briefly joining the ANC, if I'm correct with that history, but you'll correct me if I'm wrong. As a young person, what do you think were the, again, the lessons that you had learned about how politics runs and works in organizations? Because young people tend to have less of a voice in these structures, mm-hmm, than those that are, let's say, part of the leadership. Of course, when you're a young person, mm-hmm, it can often be to the interests of some leaders to give you a platform. But even that is done to the extent that it is fulfilling or serving certain interests.
That's very true, Kathy. Being a young person in a political party is the most demoralizing thing ever. And it's the most challenging thing, because you are forever fighting for space. You are forever fighting for a voice. You are forever trying to be seen, and you are forever trying to be heard, because the issues that you want to advocate for, there's no other person who has got a direct interest to them but yourself. And you are often met with people who have got so much engraved level of intolerance towards taking issues of young people into seriousness. But I think I had a privilege of understanding those dynamics and asserting myself that I will not be pushed to the background, and I will not allow, whether it's an old person, old man, old woman, comrade, or whoever, who is not interested in youth issues, I will not let that demoralize me, and I will not let it deter me from being a constant irritation that must raise issues. And I think what sets us apart as that generation of young people at that particular point in time from the one of today is that we were very forceful. We had a forceful agitation. Mm-hmm. We were not easily pushed aside, because I do want to believe that our burning desire to ensure that we lay our own footprint of being young leaders was unapologetic. Mm-hmm. We were not, I mean, it was not easy to deal with Umkhuluwa, Comrade Khalima Montlante as the SG, because, mm-hmm, I mean, we've grown respect. Umkhuluwa has always belonged to the group of leaders that we've had so much respect for. But when we had to let him know that you being an SG and allowing the then former deputy president of the ANC running amok and thinking that it's okay because you have since clinched deals with each other and you are going to do that at the expense of us as young revolutionaries within the ANC, and you think you're going to be allowed because you know we respect you, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it had to, whilst we had to remain in a respectful tone, but we also needed to ensure that the voice of what we wanted to carry through, it does get heard. And I think those are some of the challenges that I always say when I speak to young people. You will never meet an elderly person in the political circles who is willing to pay an ear to youth issues. But young people must have a forceful agitation that must be unapologetic about driving their issues. And we must respect these leaders, but respecting them must not come with fearing them. They must know that whilst we respect them, there is no way that we can fear them, because they are not the only people who legitimately possess the ability to bring solutions to the challenges that this country is facing. Mm-hmm. And if we are not able to have spaces where our voices are heard in political parties, How is a politician going to come out of a political party and go listen to a young person who does not belong to this party? So we were trying also to ensure that we socialize them into understanding youth mindset and how does young people think, and where must you look when you are thinking about youth issues? Because if you are not able to engage with your young people within the organization, you are just going to be out of reach and out of touch with the realities when you need to deal with young people out there.
Mm. So then it obviously at some point becomes untenable, whether it's with the ANC or even with COPE. You decide that you're not going to be participating within political parties, structures, as you had done traditionally.
Yeah.
Why?
Look, the reality about politics is that if you are a person who is running without having your own personal conviction, you will not be able to see when the vehicle is not going the right direction, because you are not driven by your own personal conviction first. With me, I've always been a person who take a pause and reflect on the journey. And I think the turning point when I was still in the ANC was, everything that now has come to be experienced by South Africans, which we warned about as far back as 2002, when people said, no, we were being tribalist, we were being, we were simply stopping the rise of the former president Jacob Zuma on the basis that we just wanted President Thabo Mbeki to run and endlessly without being stopped. But the reality was that when we were inside the ANC at the time, things that were being done that were un-ANC, things that were totally in contrast of the culture that we have come to know of the organization, for me, they necessitated that one must begin to put new lenses of looking at where exactly is this organization going. But I think over and above that, fast forward to that, when we ultimately were able to establish COPE, mm-hmm. and when I served in parliament as one of the youngest members of parliament then, I was not tempted to stay in parliament for the perks and the benefits of that came with being a member of parliament. Mm-hmm. Because again, COPE was now going for a third year of being focused in one thing and one thing only, the internal leadership tussle that was refusing to go. And at the core of my reflection was, what did South Africans say to me when they gave me their vote to come and serve in parliament? They said, Anele, we believe in you. We see a leader in you. We see our issues reflected in you. Mm-hmm. And we resonate with so much that you say. So when I did that reflection, I had to go back to those voices that entrusted me for the very first time as a young person to say, go to parliament, because we know, we see that there's something that you will go there and do. But what was it for me when I was in parliament without being able to continue the journey of the people of South Africa whose aspirations and hopes were on my shoulders? And I felt that it was not only travesty, it was also a betrayal if I was to continue. And that's why I decided to take a decision to resign and leave that job with all its perks, with all its benefits, with all its proximity to leadership and all the good that it brings one. Because for me, it was no longer about the occupation of the position and the power that came with it. It was about being true to the cause. Am I able to fulfill the task? No, I wasn't. And COPE was not proving to be concerned about the people that we came there for. And I was not going to continue there simply because I needed to fulfill the beauty that comes with the benefit that I was going to get as a person.
Mm. And so then, at the point that you... Because you could simply have just left COPE and not gone back to the ANC, and yet you did. So what was driving your thinking at the time?
I think one of the things that I must speak to is my coming into the ANC, being born in the ANC, has given me a privilege of knowing the ANC that no longer exists now. I was introduced to an ANC that was about the people, but the people all throughout. I was not in an organization that was about discussing tenders, that was about discussing opportunities, that was about discussing which position is good for who, which faction must now be in charge. I was introduced to an ANC that would hold weekend bosberads where you'll be taught politics, where you'll be engaged on discussion documents that were about shaping your ideological construct as a young revolutionary politician who must emerge understanding not just only class issues, class struggle issues, but also understanding what is the ideological cause that we are pursuing as the ANC at a very young age. And I guess moving from COPE, the only thing I knew was the ANC. Mm-hmm. And knowing the ANC has always been a privilege because, like I'm saying, it was not the ANC that was seized with anything else except the cause of the people. And that was an admirable thing because you'll remember, Kathy, at the time, we did not have this, oversaturation of what is now dominant political parties that are calling themselves leftist and leaning political parties, social movements and this, that and the other. We knew and we identified with the ANC because it had all the characteristic of an organization that's driving an agenda of black people. And COPE having failed, what was then left was what I knew and what I have been and what had produced me. But the good thing about it was that I did not leave COPE and jump into a frontline active space of wanting to occupy a position in the ANC because, again, the journey of reflection was on course and it had to continue. Mm-hmm. Because remember, what in my eyes had collapsed COPE were the tendencies of the ANC that had crossed with the leaders to COPE. And that was not to be something that I was now all of a sudden going to say, no, this is a unique or an isolated issue. No, it was not. Because it was, COPE became a victim of a clear depiction of the rot that the ANC has characterized itself to be.
We'll continue the conversation with independent candidate Anele Mda. She's one of those making history this year, contesting the 2024 elections. That conversation continues in a moment. It's 10:30, time for your latest news headlines.
With Kathy Motlatsana, weekdays, 9 a.m. till midday.
We continue the conversation on the talking point. Of course, I'll be taking your calls for Anele Mda on 086-000-2032. She's an independent candidate who's contesting for a seat in the National Assembly. So she'll be one of those that's on the regional ballot. It's the third ballot that will be introduced this year. On the WhatsApp voice notes, 0614-104-107. So Anele, you know, your time as a youth leader or a young leader was also characterized by you being quite fiery. So a number of times you had to be called in, reined over the knuckles for comments you had made, you know, maybe just going too far. You're older now, maybe wiser. What are the lessons that you would say you have learned on the journey, especially the way in which some of that can also impact you as an individual, as somebody who is running for a seat in the National Assembly?
You know, Kathy, I've been a militant, Anele, in my younger days. And I don't even think I would want a younger Anele not to be militant. And I don't think that radical Anele ought to have been tamed. I loved her the way she was. I loved her the way she is. Still a bit radical even now. But yeah, no, we can see now that no, growth is taking its own toll on her. I don't think we should look at ourselves and in our younger versions and want to remove anything, especially in the correctness of, no matter how reckless a person can say we were in dealing with certain issues. Mm-hmm. That is the nature of young people, and they must be allowed to be. I think that is how we manage at that time as young people. That's how we manage to claim our space consistently, because we never waited for anyone to accord us space. Mm-hmm. We always were on the run to unapologetically descend to spaces. When we were being closed out, we were always pushing and bulldozing to get inside. And it was a way of also teaching elderly people and older leaders how young people move. Because a country does require a radical young revolutionaries. And they are a necessary investment, because that's where you get to gauge. When you are no longer here as the leaders of the day, who will rise? Do you have a hope that there are people who will be ready to assume the reins of leadership? And I think we knew that we were maybe too radical, we were maybe too militant, and we were at some point maybe too reckless. We were we're speaking without a well-roundedness of how we're supposed to construct things and put things into a proper perspective. But that's not a role of a young person. A role of a young person is to ensure that there is an energetic drive and vibrancy with which issues are being raised. A young person must not come into the space and say, when the debate is about inequalities, a young person must not come and be like, we need to be mindful and appreciate. No, that's not a language of a young person. That's a language of old people. A young person must say, the fact that we've got old people that are gathered here who are talking politely amongst themselves about the future of this country in total disregard of how young people are feeling is a failure and dereliction of duty. That's a language of a young person. The minute you convert a young person to be an apologetic, tamed, toned down, you must know that there's no future in this country. So for me, a radical militant Anele is a person that gave birth to this woman who is unapologetic at this point as well. But obviously, there's much more wisdom now. And I would love to see many Aneles that are radical that will come and go head to head with us, because we're no longer militant now. We're no longer as radical now. But we still need that radical energy of young people that must raise issues that are affecting them sharply and without any apology.
Well, you certainly are not one to be apologetic and are seemingly still claiming your space. I want to play this clip for our listeners. I'm sure you're going to remember what happened and when it happened.
Ladies and gentlemen, the IEC officials and the board and everyone else that is here, I greet you all this afternoon. Where is my photo, IEC? The one that is registered to be on the ballot. People are not going to see this on the ballot. Where is my photo? The other political parties have been having their banners there, their logos. Where is my photo? I was asked to send a photo that is going to be on the ballot, and I did. Where is it? No, but it must be reflected here. People are not going to vote for an empty space when they are voting for me. They are going to vote for a person. I am campaigning as an individual. Where is my photo? I was requested to send a photo, and I duly complied. I was asked twice. I never complained. I complied. Where is my photo? No, don't say it. Just proceed. Someone must account, Mhlekazi. I'm not being disrespectful, but I need to know, how must I speak? Because I'm going to be pledging on the code of conduct that I am going to adhere with it. But people must know who is speaking. It must be the person they are going to go to the ballot paper and see. They must know the face they must go and vote for in the ballot paper. No, IEC, someone come here and explain to me. I want to pledge, but someone must come here and explain to me. Someone must do something, guys. Tetani.
Anele, you make a good point. However, if I say to you that there's a photo that we have, it is not there. The photo that we are asked to have is for the ballot paper itself, not for the signing of the code of conduct. But you do make a good point. And because of that, I say to you, I am sorry that we have not met your expectations.
All right. As you heard there, not even the IEC escaping accountability. It was on the signing of the electoral code of conduct by parties and independent candidates. And of course, as the candidates go up, the logos of the political parties are displayed on the screen. When the independent candidates went up, then there was an issue with Annelies' picture because they didn't have her picture. And, you know, the reason why I wanted us to play that clip, Annelies, was not because of the viral nature of the comments, because it did go viral, but it was more to me also a reflection of the position that independent candidates find themselves in this election. One very much gets the sense that we've had to make room for independent candidates, that it is not a system that necessarily is designed to also work well or to work as well for independent candidates as it does for political parties. So speak to me about just the journey that you have been on as an independent candidate and where you think the challenges have been.
You know, Kathy, one of the things that I have taken a view on is to really have some sense of appreciation that the IEC has been caught on a situation where they have had to try and keep this process as most objective as possible as they can, understanding though that it is a new process for them as well, and teething problems were to be expected somewhere, somehow. And also, obviously, as the new entrants, ourselves as independent candidates, we were bound to maybe carry or to suffer more burden and consequences of the teething problems. But there are problems that must be expected and those that must not be accepted at all. One of the glaring challenges that I would make mention of, for instance, is that there has been very unclear articulation from the IEC leading up to the 8th of March, when we needed to meet the deadline, on the practical compliance issues that we needed to be mindful of. For instance, the process of collecting signatures from people who must endorse your candidacy as a person. We were of the view that you need to crisscross South Africa, go get physical signatures from people, explain to them what are you standing and why you think you are the right person to stand, and then get to hear them endorsing or not endorsing you, get their signatures if they do endorse you. Only for us to get to know on the 8th itself, on the 8th of March, the only thing we needed was an ID number. After we have exhausted so much resources, I mean, I stay in Pretoria, but I had to go to KZN, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, trying to solicit signatures. Those are resources that I could have used in my election campaign. But I thought, because the IEC was not clear in its communication, I thought IEC needs physical papers. On the day of submission, we were told that you need to come with signatures that are consolidated in a spreadsheet, and you just need to bring a USB that has got the ID numbers only. Yet we were going around with a paper making people sign. So those were some of the challenges that were serious challenges that could have made a person not to fully comply and as a result get ultimately be declined by the IEC. But they were not our own making, right? And I think on top of that, past the 8th of March, I think there are issues about the administrative glitches that I think their system has since had. I have not been affected by any of those, but I think there are, for instance, certain areas that could have easily been explained much clearer by the IEC. For instance, to say you are eligible to contest a province, and each province comes with its own financial deposit. So if you want more, you must know early in advance that you need to prepare. Assuming that you want to contest in three provinces, get 60,000 ready, because that's what you will be charged. The only information we had was that you need to have 20,000 that you must pay. But did we know this 20,000 is meant for one province or region? No, we didn't. We only got to know of it on the 8th of March. Those are some of the challenges that were very frustrating. But I think we continue to have confidence that IEC is experiencing its own challenges as well, because the process is new. But I do not think I do think there are areas that they could have done better.
What then do you think, Anele, you will offer the people of South Africa as a member of parliament? Why should they vote for you in that regional election?
One of the things that I believe I bring to the seventh administration of parliament that made me to raise my hand and say I'm ready to serve my country once again, it is because the deepened state of corruption that steals from the people of South Africa has reached the proportions of unimaginability. And any further allowance of this corruption going through will be the betrayal of the very sacrifices that were made in order for us to attain democracy. We still continue at this very day to have issues that relates to an economy that is only allowed to participants to be a selected few. It is not yet well inclusive. It is not yet transformative. It is not yet accommodative of all industries. We've got industries that refuse to be penetrated by, especially by the previously marginalized groupings. You've got financial sector, banking sector, for instance, that is dominantly self-governed. It does not want to be compliant to any law in this country. And these are some of the things that at the detrimental consequence of them is a black person most of the time, especially when we speak about the financial industry. Right now, I'm dealing with a matter that is that relates to Standard Bank, a Standard Bank that has decided to racially profile and target a black young 22-year-old child who is a freelancing consultant who makes money honestly, who does not commit crime. But guess what they did? Standard Bank, on the 2nd of April, they decided to what? To lock her account. And they lie and say it is because they need her to comply with FICA process. If you want a person to comply with FICA process, do you start by being punitive and lock their account when you do not know what are their needs that they require their access to their money with? You don't. But we've got such industries that are law unto themselves, that have been allowed to run and rule themselves without any consequence. These are some of the things that continue to push black people in particular to be at the peripheral margins of certain industries, especially where it pertains to economy. That is why, Kathy, I am very clear in my head. We will have to fight corruption, but at the core of fighting corruption is removing the tender system in government. When we remove the tender system, we enable every single deserving, merit-based South African to do business with government without having to depend on a political connection, which is a driving force at this moment in time. Because as Kathy Mhlahlana stated here, you cannot go to trade and industry now and go do business, because who are you? Who are you connected to a trade and industry that must lead you in? You don't know anyone. How many South Africans have had to close down their businesses, not because of load shedding — we will come to load shedding — because they are running businesses that are not seen by government, that are not recognized by their government, but that are not regarded as worthy because they are not aligned to any political connection. The tender system eats away the financial benefit every single citizen is supposed to benefit from, because it is remember, doing business with government, you are doing business with the only investment every citizen is a shareholder to, because you are a shareholder to the national fiscus, because it's funded by your taxes. So you are deserving of going and have returns from it and harvest from it. Get your share. Your way of getting a share in the national investment through the national fiscus is doing business with the state. But you don't have to go through a political connection. My view is that the tender system has gotten to be the one that has bred the ground of fatal corruption that has enabled politicians to live off South Africans rather than living off their own salaries.
All right. So that then is part of the message that Anele is making on her campaign trail. I've got quite a number of listeners that are lined up. I'm going to ask everybody, please keep it as short and as sweet as possible. Magdalene, you are in Mangaung. Good morning.
Morning, Cathy, and morning, Anele.
Morning, Magdalene.
Cathy? I'm so proud of Anele and Makosi Kosa and the other lady who's doing the union things. She's still young also. I forget her name. But she's doing, she's representing the workers of the mines and whatever. She was there at your studio sometime back. The only thing that I'm concerned about is that Anele, from what she said now of late, is that there is something that the politicians forget. They only forget one thing, that they are there for the benefit of the society, of the South Africans. If ever they've got in their mind that they are not going to pursue what they think is right for them to pursue, I think that's where things will be coming better off. Much as I hear that she's honest, she wants to be honest with herself and to the other people. But the most important thing is the mandate from the community. If they can just take the mandate from the community and try to pursue those mandates from the community, I think things will come better.
All right. Magdalene, thanks for that call. Denzel in Kimberley, good morning.
Good morning, Cathy. Good morning, Anele.
Morning, Denzel.
Anele, I'd like to thank you as an independent candidate for rising up and be bold enough to stand up, because our struggle right now is not, we've got freedom, we have democracy, it's leadership and people who can take, put us first rather than themselves. But my next thing is, Anele, I wish and pray that you and your other fellow people, the independent candidates, they are not conflicted with just fundings of people that gives you money. I hope and pray that's not the case.
Because,
Mr. Mantashe, then I want to go back. The struggle now is we have the freedom. In the past, our struggle was for this particular freedom and democracy. But Mr. Mantashe, he made an excuse during his interview with JJ Tabani. He said Bantu education did not teach them or prepare them for governance and how to govern and do the right thing. But there's a lame excuse, because I hope you are going to do the right thing.
All right, Denzel. We're going to have to leave it there. Denzel out in Kimberley. Ntlantla, you're in KZN. Good morning.
Good morning, my sister Katie, and good morning to the guests. And good morning to the listeners. My sister Katie and to your guests, I've got an issue of inequality, in this country. The issue of inequality, it can be seen in two terms. The labor market inequality and the non-labor market inequality. Income tax, Casey.
So, Nkanta, I'm going to ask you to get to your question.
Yes, my sister. When we look at the policies there and the bills that are going to be passed, we're speaking of the employment equity bill that's going to be passed that speaks about equality. And I don't hear much of politicians speaking about the employment equity that gets to be breached by the companies that are under JSE, which are busy infringing our equality rights in this country, just like my sister has articulated in one of the things that gets to be infringed by the banks to us as Africans in this country.
Okay.
So we demand politicians to be transparent on the issue of inequality, and they must speak broadly, because there is a policy that's going to be passed, and I don't get to hear speaking so loudly about it.
All right, Ntandla, let's leave it there. Billy Masha, you're in Skukune. Good morning.
Very good morning, sis. Let me start by appreciating the effort and the resilience of Anelemta, the young black woman who will do anything to fight for the black child. We have a challenge in this country. This inequality will stay with us for a long time unless the likes of Anele will face this thing head on. I appreciate the fact that you are fighting for a black child who is actually being victimized by the maggots. For example, you have children who don't have hope in rural areas for success. How will you inspire them?
Okay.
Despite all these atrocities that they face in life, of just being left with children and without any support from government. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the question, Billy. Let me take a couple of WhatsApp voice notes. I hope you're noting all of these down, Anele, because I'm going to give you just an opportunity to respond to all of them once we've run through these two voice notes.
Tracy, this comrade Anele sounds very diplomatic and clever and qualitative in as far as leadership is concerned. I wish her all the luck. But these ladies who want to become leaders don't have enough support, like comrades such as Makosi Khoza and the like. Let's support these ladies to become our leaders in the future. Thanks, Willie Nkuma.
Good morning, Oscar P, and good morning to your guest, Anele. My question to her is, if the young lady whom we saw going to the president, telling the president that she has tried to give out her CV, but nothing has come up, if the young lady is to come to her and ask her the same question, what would be her answer? Thank you.
All right. Quite a number of issues then for Anele. Anele?
Thank you. Thank you, Kathy. I think let's also appreciate the positive support sentiment that comes across from most of your listeners. And I think the issue that Ndadla is talking about of the emphatic articulation of the issues to address inequality cannot be overemphasized. It's very important. And I think those are some of the issues that relates to the extent to which our government has complacently allowed the corporate to do as it pleases, which is something that we need a much more aggressive and a rapid way of changing that complacent bullism that leads to exploitation. Because whether we like it or not, we cannot have, as much as we may want to attract investors who must come, businesses who must come and invest in our country, they are not coming to invest in our country for an exploitation of the labor market or for the exploitation of the labor personnel, that is the people of South Africa. Secondly, the last caller, the voice note that says, if the lady who went to the president to say to the president was looking for a job and the president said she must keep looking, if she was to come to me, what would I say? I think one of the things that I speak about in my manifesto is the issue of the a review of the internship approach, which government has said to be 12 months a requirement for companies to offer young people 12 months internship, which I believe it does not take the unemployment issue out of the challenge that we have. Because after serving that 12 months, a young person gets to be reconnected again. They join the queue again of being unemployed. So I'm saying one of my proposals on addressing unemployment is that government, we must pass, and this is something that I will propose a private member's bill in parliament on, to say we must have a fixed 36 months internship that private sector must be compelled to offer young people for internship. And the only time that the Department of Employment and Labour must pay all these corporates for their compensation on participating on the youth employment service, it is after the young person has been placed into a permanent job. Because that is how we're addressing unemployment. Because now with the internship. What we are doing is simply ticking a box of saying we have given a young person work experience. But what is the value of work experience that gets taken after 12 months back home, and then a person gets to sit with it without being applied in a workplace, as the intention should be about getting this person to accumulate work experience? But over and above the accumulation of that work experience, it must be having a place where they apply this knowledge that they have they've acquired. So that is one of the things that I strongly stand for, and I will bring a private members bill in parliament to propose this and to ensure I will see to it that it becomes a legislated law that will compel corporates to rather apply a much more cognitively objective way of introducing internship than we are doing currently.
Anele, the issue of funding is becoming, quite a big one in elections. I think partly because of the legislation that has made the process more transparent, but yes, also due to the lack of transparency despite the legislation. So as a political party, as an independent candidate, who is currently funding you? How do you raise the money to do all of the things that you need to do?
I'm actually funded by my sweat. Whatever I've worked for up until now, I'm taking from the money that belongs to my children. The money that I'm supposed to, look after my household in Flagstaff, in Holy Cross with. But also, I embarked on a public donation of a 50 rand donation on social media, where I requested people who wanted to support my campaign to donate 50 rand. And it's been doing very, very well. I'm getting those 50 rands and they are doing the things. So when you see my posters, you must know those posters come from those 50 rands.
How much have you raised so far?
I think from general public, I've raised plus minus 30,000 now.
Okay.
But from my own coffers, I think I've already used plus minus 300,000 or 350,000 now.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's quite a lot of money.
It is quite a lot of money. But I guess when the passion is there and the commitment is there and also the need for the conviction is there, the money is not necessarily that much worth it.
Okay. Anele Mda, she is contesting the elections as an independent candidate. Anele, thank you so much for coming onto the show and sharing part of your journey and your story with us. It's time for the latest news update.